Good morning, dear Sangha. Today is Sunday, March the 18th, in the year 2012, and we are in the Upper Hamlet, during our spring retreat. It's very nice to hear the sound of Lorraine. Many of us know that eternity can be touched in this present moment. And the cosmos can be seen in the palm of our hand. But we need some mindfulness and concentration in order to touch eternity in the present moment and to see the whole cosmos in the palm of our hand. When you practice the 10 mindful movements, you can touch the eternity with every movement. If you are truly mindful, if you are truly concentrated, if you are able to release the notion of self, you are no longer this tiny body, you are the whole cosmos. And your tiny body contains the whole cosmos in it. All the generations of the past and the future are there in your tiny body. And if you have that insight, it's easy to touch eternity in the present moment. And when you breathe in mindfully with concentration, you can also touch eternity. When you make a step mindfully with concentration, you can also touch eternity and infinity. We have received a number of questions from a magazine in London. And we are supposed to offer some answers to these questions concerning global ecological collapse. There are 9 questions that have been sent to us a few days ago, and today we try to answer some of them. The first one is, do you believe humans can avoid a global ecological collapse? Or are we driving ourselves towards one? The second question, the urban population across the world is growing. What, if anything, is lost by our increasing switch towards being an urban species? The third question, are we a vulnerable species or one still in control of our destiny? Each question requires one in-breath and one out-breath to be received. The fourth question, there is strong support for engineered solutions to our ecological problems. For example, reflecting the sun's rays, sucking up carbon emissions or lab-grown meat. Is this the right approach for us to be taking? The fifth question, most of us in the West are still attached to a high consumption lifestyle. We like to buy new and exciting things. Is there a strong enough alternative lifestyle out there that can convince us to leave this high consumption lifestyle behind? Six, have we found a new narrative, one that can help us learn to live more sustainably before it is too late? The seventh question, what is the hardest part of the lifestyle you have chosen to lead? And how do you attract young people to follow? The eighth, can we strive for financial and spiritual contentment, or are they mutually exclusive? Can we be at the same time rich and spiritual? And the nine, most environmentalists narrow down the problems we face into two issues, overconsumption and overpopulation. Where do you stand? I think we should try to answer the first and the third one because they are connected. Do you believe humans can avoid a global ecological collapse? Or are we driving ourselves towards one? Are we a vulnerable species or one still in control of our destiny? The National Wildlife Federation tells us that every day about 100 plant and animal species are lost to deforestation, extinction of species is taking place every day. In 1 year, there may be 200,000 species going to extinction. That is what's happening. That's not the problem of the future. It's going on now. And we know that 151 million years ago, there already global warming caused by mass, caused by gigantic volcanic eruptions. That caused the worst mass extinction in the history of the planet. That time, a 6 degree centigrade increase in the global temperature and was enough to kill up to 95% of the species that were alive on Earth. Global warming already happened 251 million years ago. Because of volcanic eruptions, and 95% of species on Earth disappear. And now a second global warming is taking place, this time because of deforestation and industrialization, man-made. And maybe in 100 years, there will be no more humans on the planet. Just 100 years. After the disappearance of 95% of species on Earth caused by that mass extinction, the Earth took 100 million years in order to restore life as we see now on Earth. 100 million years. And if our civilization disappears, it will take some time like that for another civilization to reappear. When volcanic eruptions happened. The carbon dioxide build up, created the greenhouse effect that was 251 million years ago. And now the building up of carbon dioxide is coming from our own lifestyle and our industrial activities. And if an increase of 6 degrees centigrade takes place, and then 95% of the species on Earth will die out, including Homo sapiens. That is why we have to learn how to touch eternity with our in-breath and out breath. So extinctions of species have happened several times. Mass extinction have happened already 5 times, and this one is the 6th. But according to the Buddhist teaching, there is no birth and no death. After extinction, well, things will reappear in other forms. So you have to breathe very deeply in order to acknowledge the fact that we humans may disappear in just 100 years on Earth. And you have to learn to accept that hard fact. You should not be overwhelmed by despair. The solution is to learn how to touch eternity in the present moment. We have been talking about the environment as something that is different from us. But we are the environment. The non-human elements are our environment, but we are the environment of non-human elements. So we are one with the environment. We are the environment. We are the earth. And the earth has the capacity to restore balance. And sometimes many species have to disappear in order to for the balance to be restored. Maybe the flood, maybe the heat, maybe the air. The second question, the urban population across the world is growing. What is lost by our increasing switch towards being an urban species? Well, the life in the cities and life in the countryside, now they are connected because we have to feed the city. That is why the countryside has to change. And the countryside is being contaminated by many things. The countryside has to use a lot of antibiotics, poisons, insecticide in order to provide the cities with food and things like that. So the countryside is no longer safe for us. And even if we go back to the countryside and continue the same kind of consumption, there is no solution. Whether you are in the city or you are in the countryside, you are losing. You are losing a lot. Even now, in the countryside, we have more chance to touch nature, to touch the earth. It's a little bit easier to heal ourselves with the practice of touching the earth in the countryside. But the countryside is also losing itself for the sake of the cities. The fourth question, there is strong support for engineered solutions to our ecological problems, like reflecting sun rays, sucking up carbon emissions, or lab-grown meat. Is this the right approach for us to be taking? That might help. But that is not enough. What we need is a transformation of our consciousness, our idea of happiness, our lifestyle. And this is linked to the fifth question. Most of us in the West are still attached to a high consumption lifestyle. Not only in the West. In Asian countries, people are doing very much the same thing. We like to buy new and exciting things. Is there a strong enough alternative lifestyle out there that can convince us to leave this high consumption lifestyle behind? We are seeking for happiness, but there is suffering inside of us. There is a big vacuum inside of us. That is why we are looking for things outside in order to fill up the vacuum inside. That is our situation. We are getting sick. We don't feel at peace with ourselves. We have a big vacuum inside. And we don't know how to fill up that with better things. So we look for consumption. We think that if we can buy new and exciting things, and then we can forget the vacuum inside. But that does not seem to have an effect. We are buying more and more, but we do not feel that kind of a fulfillment. We need love. We need peace. But we do not know how to create love and peace. So we are looking for other things in order to cover up that kind of suffering, that kind of vacuum in us. Of course, there must be some kind of lifestyle that can help us create love and joy. And we do not have to go to the market and buy things. And unless you know how to create that kind of life, well, you continue to buy, to go and buy things. Suppose you know how to enjoy walking meditation. With some training, you know how to bring your mind back to your body so that your mind and your body are together. And your mind, when your mind and body are together, you are truly there. And you can recognize that the rain is wonderful. The trees are beautiful, the air is still somehow fresh, and you can enjoy breathing in, breathing out, and touch the wonders of life in this present moment. In fact, if we bring our mind home to our body, if we know how to stop our thinking, and then we will be established in the present moment. We are mindful of our body, we are mindful of what is going on in our body and around us, and we are in a situation to touch the wonders of life that are available in the here and the now. We are able to see that our body is a wonder. A lot of wonders in our body, in our mind also. And when we reach out to the environment, we see that there are so many wonders also. In fact, this present moment is full of wonders. And because you don't know how to touch these wonders, you don't know how to appreciate life, to appreciate what is there. And you run in order to look for something that you think will make you happy. Suppose we learn about the five mindfulness trainings. The five mindfulness trainings is kind of lifestyle that is born from a vision called interbeing. Everything is connected to everything else. Your happiness and the happiness of other species inter-are. If you are healthy, if you are happy, and then other forms of life can profit from you. If you are sick, if you suffer, and then other species will have to suffer with you. And that insight of interbeing help you to see that you are linked to everything else. And to protect yourself, you have to protect nature and every other species. And that insight of interbeing will help you to remove discrimination, fear, anger, and make you feel better in yourself. The five mindfulness trainings help us to train how to protect life. The first training is about protecting life, your life, and the life of other species. And your life and the lives of other species are interrelated. And when you try to protect the lives of other species, you protect your own life. In order to protect ourselves, we have to protect others. And that is the practice of the first mindfulness training. Like when you breathe in mindfully, you can see that Mother Earth is in you, and you are in Mother Earth. And that kind of insight help you to remove your fear of dying. And help you to see that in order to protect yourself, you have to protect Mother Earth. Protecting Mother Earth is to protect yourself. Protecting other species is protecting oneself. This is very clear. That is the first of the five mindfulness trainings. If you think that you are intelligent enough as a species, and then you may be able to use your talent, your technologies, your love, your insight in order to protect the lives of other species. And even if you are the youngest of the species on Earth, you can play the role of an elder brother, an elder sister, and try to look up for the well-being of other species. This is a very beautiful thing to do. And that is what Mother Earth is expecting you to do as a species on Earth, the Homo sapiens. So protecting life is a joy. And that is an act, that is a kind of lifestyle that comes from the inside of inner being. You are doing it for yourself, because life is one. Life cannot be chopped into several pieces. And to live in such a way that help you to protect life can bring you a lot of joy, because that is love itself. And when you have love in yourself, you don't have to run and buy things, because love is fulfilling. Love makes you peaceful and happy. And the third mindfulness training is about love, true love, cultivating true love. And aware of the suffering caused by sexual misconduct, I am committed to cultivating responsibility and learning ways to protect the safety and integrity of individuals, couples, families, and society. Knowing that sexual desire is not love, and that sexual activity motivated by craving always harms myself as well as others, I am determined not to engage in sexual relations without true love and a deep, long-term commitment established in the presence of the family and friends. I will do everything in my power to protect children from sexual abuse and to prevent couples and families from being broken by sexual misconduct. Seeing that body and mind are one, I am committed to learning appropriate ways to take care of my sexual energy and to cultivating kindness, compassion, joy, patience, inclusiveness, and all elements of true love for my greater happiness and the greater happiness of others. Practicing true love, we know that we will continue beautifully into the future. So for the third mindfulness training about true love, you have to learn how to generate the energy of loving kindness, compassion, joy, and inclusiveness. This is an art of loving. And if you are so busy, if you only think of consuming, how do you have the time in order to love? We learn one thing from the third mindfulness training. Sexual desire and love, they are two different things. Because love can only build, heal, rebuild, heal. And we have to learn how to love ourselves. We have to learn how to take care of our body, to release the tension in our body, to reduce the pain in our body. And there are very concrete ways to do it. You know how to practice touching the earth by walking meditation, by lying down, allowing nature to heal you. You know how to release the tension in your body, to reduce the pain in your body, not to work your body too hard. All these things we can do. But if you are so busy making money in order to buy things, how do you have time to do so? And there are those of us who know how to organize our life in such a way that we have enough time to love, to take care of ourselves, and to take care of others around us. Every time you are in touch with the suffering and you understand the suffering in yourself and in the other person, you allow the energy of compassion to arise in you. In fact, every time we get in touch with the suffering in us, we are aware the suffering is there. Every time we look deeply into the nature of suffering and see the causes of that suffering, well, compassion in us will be born as a kind of energy. Whether that suffering is in us or in the other person. So getting in touch with suffering and allow the energy of compassion to arise is something that we can do, provided that we are not so busy making money and buying things. And the energy of compassion can heal us, and heal the other person, and heal the earth. So learning how to generate a feeling of joy, of happiness, by touching the oneness of life, and generating compassion by touching suffering, understanding suffering, are the things all of us can do that belong to the kind of lifestyle that can heal ourselves and heal the earth. So the third training is about true love, and this is possible if we practice, we have the time to practice as a group of people, a Sangha. The second mindfulness training is true happiness, because if we realize that happiness cannot be possible with only making money and buying things, we should know how to generate and create true happiness. aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing and oppression. I am committed to practicing generosity in my thinking, speaking and acting. I am determined not to steal and not to possess anything that should belong to others. And I will share my time, energy and material resources with those who are in need. I will practice looking deeply to see that the happiness and suffering of others are not separate from my own happiness and suffering. That true happiness is not possible without understanding and compassion. And that running after wealth, fame, power, and sensual pleasures can bring much suffering and despair. I am aware that happiness depends on my mental attitude and not on external conditions. That I can live happily in the present moment simply by remembering that I already have more than enough conditions to be happy. That is the practice of mindfulness. I am committed to establishing a livelihood that will help reduce the suffering of living beings on earth and reverse the process of global warming. So this proves that true happiness is possible. It should stop running after fame, power, wealth, and sensual pleasures. It should recognize the wonders of life that are available in the present moment. It should be able to help ourselves and other people suffer less. And that is something very concrete to do that belongs to the lifestyle that we are looking for. And the fourth mindfulness training is about how to restore communication. Between father and son, father and daughter, mother and son, mother and daughter, partner and partner, brothers and brothers, brother and sisters and so on. If we can not communicate, we suffer. And very often we cannot communicate with our own self. You don't like yourself, you hate yourself. You don't know how to listen to yourself. You don't know how to help yourself. So the practice of loving speech and deep listening should be also practiced directed to ourselves. We have to learn to listen to ourselves, to listen to the deepest desire in ourselves, to listen to the suffering in ourselves in order to understand. And when we have understood our suffering, our deepest aspiration, we will be able to understand, to listen and to understand the aspiration and the suffering of the other person. And this is something we can do. This is the object of the fourth mindfulness training. We are deeply divided as a society. We are trying to kill each other. And the killing is taking place everywhere, at any time, day and night. We have a lot of fear, anger, discrimination, despair. And that is because there is not enough communication between members of our species. Yeah, not only killing other species, yeah, killing ourselves as a species. And that is why technology is not enough. We have to learn how to listen, how to speak lovingly. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful speech and inability to listen to others, I am committed to cultivating loving kind speech and compassionate listening in order to relieve suffering and to promote reconciliation and peace in myself and among other people, ethnic and religious groups and nations. Knowing that words can create happiness or suffering, I am committed to speaking truthfully using words that inspire confidence, joy, and hope. When anger is manifesting in me, I am determined not to speak. I will practice mindful breathing and walking in order to recognize and to look deeply into my anger. I know that the roots of anger can be found in my wrong perceptions and lack of understanding of the suffering in myself and in the other person. I will speak and listen in such a way that I can help myself and the other person to transform suffering and see the way out of difficult situations. I am determined not to spread news that I do not know to be certain, and not to utter words that can cause division or discord. I will practice diligently with joy and skillfulness in order to nourish my capacity for understanding, love, and inclusiveness, and gradually transform anger, violence, and fear that lie deep in my consciousness. And we know that 5 days, 6 days of practice in a retreat can help us understand the suffering in ourselves and understanding in the other person, and help us to know how to listen to the suffering in us and the suffering in the other person. And when the energy of compassion is born, we'll be able to listen with compassion and to use loving speech and restore communication. And any one of us can do that. Just 4 or 5 days of training. And that happens always in our retreats. So that is part of the lifestyle that we are looking for. It's there. That's a noble style of living. And you don't need to be a Buddhist in order to adapt that kind of lifestyle. The 5th mindfulness training is about nourishment and healing. And all of us need nourishment and healing. Most of us are sick. We don't know how to go back to nature and get the healing. We don't know how to generate the energy of compassion and joy in order to heal ourselves. We rely only on medicines, antibiotics, surgery. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful consumption, I am committed to cultivating good health, both physical and mental, for myself, my family, and my society by practicing mindful eating, drinking, and consuming. I will practice looking deeply into how I consume. This is the key practice. consumption. We cannot get out of this difficult, despairing situation unless we make a revolution in the way we consume. I will be aware of what I eat, what I consume through my senses, and what intentions and mental state I cultivate in my consciousness. I am determined not to gamble, use alcohol, drugs, or any other products which contain toxins, such as certain websites, electronic games, TV programs, films, magazines, books, and conversations. I will practice coming back to the present moment to be in touch with the refreshing, healing, and nourishing elements in me and around me, and not letting regrets and sorrow drag me back into the past, nor letting anxieties, fear, or craving pull me out of the present moment. I am determined not to try to cover up loneliness, anxiety, or other suffering by losing myself in consumption. I will contemplate interbeing and consume in a way that preserves peace, joy, and well-being in my body and consciousness, and in the collective body and consciousness of my family, society, and the earth. So mindful consumption is a way out, the way out. So that is to try to respond to the fifth question. Most of us in the West are still attached to a high consumption lifestyle. We like to buy new and exciting things. Is there a strong enough alternative lifestyle out there that can convince us to leave this high consumption lifestyle behind? And the sixth question is the same. Have we found a new narrative, one that can help us learn to live more sustainably before it is too late? The seventh question, what is the hardest part of the lifestyle you have chosen to lead? And how do you attract young people to follow? I don't think I have deprived myself of anything I like by choosing to be a monk. In fact, I enjoy the life of a monk. For instance, when we follow a vegetarian diet, you are very happy because you can do so. You don't suffer when you follow a vegetarian diet. You don't suffer because you don't eat meat and drink alcohol. In fact, you are very happy. It's fortunate to be able to eat vegetarian because you know that you don't have to eat the flesh of other species in order to be alive. And you can help protect life by eating. In fact, we have to learn to eat in such a way that can preserve our planet and reduce the suffering of living beings. And that is why eating vegetarian can be a great joy, especially when you know how to cook. In fact, we have to produce a cookbook to tell the people that they can get a lot of joy and happiness just eating vegetarian. And we have come to know that the life of a monk is much easier than the life of a lay practitioner. Because as a monk, you live in a community. And you follow the community, sitting meditation, walking meditation, eating on time, it's so easy. And you know that the third mindfulness training about sexual misconduct is much easier for a monk to practice the third mindfulness training than a lay person. The easiest to practice is to be a monk. Believe us. We don't deprive ourselves of anything. In fact, we have a lot of joy living together. We build a lot of, we have a lot of time to build brotherhood, sisterhood that sustains us. A romantic love cannot last as long as brotherhood and sisterhood. And our suggestion is that we should not continue to rush into the cities, but we should try to create communities in the countryside, like Plumridge. You can create a lay community, and it's not necessary to be a Buddhist community, just a community. And we can organize like the kibbutz. And share our cars, our tractors, our children. The presence of children in a community is very wonderful. And you don't have to be father and mother in order to enjoy the presence of young people or children. I became a monk when at the age of 16. And I don't feel that I suffer because I don't have children, because I have so many spiritual children, monastic and lay children. I enjoy very much doing sitting with them, doing walking with them. In our retreat, children enjoy also holding my hand and do walking meditation. So I don't feel that I am deprived of having children. So in a community, even if you don't have children, you can look on children of other couples as your own children. You can establish your own school, where you can teach them the five mindfulness trainings, the art of being happy, how to breathe, how to relax, how to build brotherhood and sisterhood from the beginning. You can can establish communities in like Plum Village, a few hundred people living together. And you share apartments, houses, cars. We don't have to use many cars. You can reduce the number of cars by two-thirds. Because as living in the city, every house has to have one car, two cars. Every person needs a car to go and study or to work. That's too many. But living as a community of 200, 300 people, you use less, much less car. You can use public, you have community cars. You can share refrigerators, you can share tractors, and you can garden together, you can build a school, a park, and you can enjoy the children of other couples. Like in my case. So I have not deprived myself of anything. The hardest thing, maybe, to learn how to say no to requests of having retreats, of organizing retreats. This is the most difficult thing we in Plumridge have to face. Because everywhere people ask us to come and organize a retreat. But we can not always say yes. Our heart is broken when we have to say no to Indonesia, to Malaysia, to Singapore, the next Asian trip. But in order to preserve ourselves, to continue for a longer time, we have to learn to say no. The same is true with North America, South America, Europe, and other countries. There's so many retreats already. We cannot afford to create more, to offer more. And that is why I think if I say that there is one hard thing in our life is to say no. Because the need to have a retreat is everywhere. It's felt very clearly everywhere. And how do you attract young people to follow? Well, we don't try to attract young people at all. They just come. Because when they come, to our retreats, to the Prajna Temple in Vietnam, they see that there is brotherhood and sisterhood. And that is what we need the most in our life. Many of the young people have experienced romantic love and they have suffered. And when they come to Prajna Temple, they see pure brotherhood and sisterhood. We can be ourselves, we can be nourished by that kind of energy of brotherhood and sisterhood. And that is why to create a community and to build brotherhood and sisterhood as the element to nourish us is a very important thing. You can devote your life into doing so. So instead of going to big cities, and have to breathe that kind of air that is so polluted, that you can organize, we can organize so that we can create many small communities in the countryside and trying to live in such a way that can help protect Mother Earth, protect the environment. We can work, we can also garden, and we can do it together like in Plum Village. And you can use your talent in order to serve the community and building brotherhood and sisterhood, alternative lifestyle. I think the 5 mindfulness trainings will be the directive representing the lifestyle that we do. So if the young people come to us, not because the Dharma talks we offer or anything else, it is the joy, the happiness generated by brotherhood and sisterhood. And our practice, our daily practice, is to do so, to generate the energy of love, brotherhood and sisterhood. There should be a political party in France that is capable of generating brotherhood. La liberté, égalité, fraternité. We know that fraternité, brotherhood is important. But we only talk about it. We don't know how to generate fraternity. So if there is a political party that has the power to generate fraternity, we will join that political party. But many people just talk about it. And establishing small communities like that will truly generate the energy of brotherhood, sisterhood. And the young people, they are capable of seeing that. And many of them will devote their life into Sangha building in order to generate that energy that you cannot buy in supermarket. Can we strive for financial and spiritual contentment? Or are they mutually exclusive? It means, can you be both rich and spiritual? But do we need to be rich? Do we need to make money? In Plum Village, we also need money, but not to buy things, to consume things. We need the money to organize a retreat, to hire a bus, to build a Sangha quarters, to build a meditation hall. When we go to a city, we need some money in order to buy the tickets for Dharma teachers, monastic brothers and sisters, because we know that transformation and healing in a retreat would require the presence of enough Dharma teachers and monastic practitioners. The first time we went to North America for a retreat with 30 monastics, that was made possible by a businessman, Pritam Singh. We did not think that we can bring 30 monastics to North America to organize retreats. But he said that, well, he will make a donation so that we can buy 30 air tickets for 30 monastics. And in fact, if Tigers alone, he can also organize a retreat, but the outcome of the retreat cannot be compared with a retreat with 30 monastics. So after that venture, people see the advantage of having monastics in a retreat, and that is why they have supported in order for us, every time to come to America, we can bring 30 or even more. But we seek financial support, not for buying new and exciting things, but to have more place for practitioners to stay during a retreat, to bring more monastics to a retreat, to build a meditation hall, to build a monastic quarters, and always has come. If our spiritual practice brings fruit, and then there will be friends who will help us on that side, financial side. But it's very clear that spiritual practice can bring a lot of happiness and love and fulfillment. And you don't need a lot of money in order to be happy. So this is no longer a problem. If there is more financial help, and then many people many more people will profit from the practice. And if we are limited by financial conditions, well, the number of practitioners will not increase, that is all. But we do not sacrifice our practice, our spiritual life, for the sake of financial realization. I'm happy because there is only one more question. Most environmentalists narrow down the problems we face into two issues, overconsumption and overpopulation. Where do you stand? Where do we stand? Of course, we have to reduce consumption. We have to consume in such a way that can reduce the suffering of species on Earth. This is very clear. But we have to reduce population also. And to be a monk or nun is one of the ways to reduce overpopulation. So I am calling from for you to join us as monks and nuns. And then if you can create small communities, and if you can establish school, and you can take care of the children of other couples, well, we don't miss our children. So, based on my own experience as a monk, I have not deprived myself of anything in life. In fact, I enjoy a lot. And although I do not have blood children, I feel that I have a lot of children, and they give me a lot of joy and energies and freshness. So I think we have to act on two levels. We have to go down in consumption and go down in population, and this is possible. And we don't have to deprive ourselves of anything, including the presence of children in our life. Thầy Pháp Lai, is good enough. So let us enjoy the rest of our mindfulness day together as a community. Thank you.